chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns.
What are they going to say?
No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return. And I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, North Bay Extension Jack sent them out. We just put Weber on the board. SP Futures up 10. We're trying to bounce here. So far, nothing but dead cat bounces and then down. NASDAQ Futures down 46. Dow Futures down 96. Oil up 5 cents. It's talk about a dead cat bounce. Oil 56.30. It's trying to do something here. A little bit of a rally out of gold yesterday for the first time in a while. So gold is back up to 12.10. So that was a pretty good rally there over in Europe. We've got a mixed bag in Asia, not so much. So except for Hang Seng at a big rally to make up for them being down the rest of the week. So the markets are kind of all over the place, but they're still not making no thought here of a bottom, really. We'll see if today is. But we were roughly the right same spot yesterday, and then 10 minutes into the trading day, we were down. Lou, how are you?
I'm very good, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It looks like we're in a little bit of a sell rally mode here, at least for a while.
I was actually listening to your description and thinking that, you know, we're going to get mobbed by hordes of animal lovers now after you talking about bouncing dead cats around.
Well, that's
what?
That's what the trading floor used to call a day when you're down 500 and then you're up 50. You know, it's a dead cat.
Yeah, the politically correct forces will be after both of us.
Lou, I think you need to call back, buddy, because whatever phone you're using, you're in the wrong spot or you're staring at dead animals or something.
Is it any better now?
Actually, it is. What'd you do?
Yeah. I don't know what's going on, but let's see how it goes. Otherwise, I'll call back in.
All right, bud. So
much better now.
Much better.
We're having some feedback, but it's much better now.
Okay.
So you turned off the microwave or something?
Well, it's actually moved the position of the phone slightly, but I'm all over political correctness. You know, I'm a politically correct guy, I don't want to offend any dead cats out there that are listening. So our apologies. If you actually bounce when you're dropped and you're a dead cat, hey man, sorry.
So you don't bounce very much. That's the whole idea.
Right. Right.
And you fall right back down.
And you fall right back down. Yeah.
Yeah. And no, I get the metaphor. I just wondered who, you know, what animal hater, you know, came up with that.
You can't insult anybody these days. Or some people can insult everybody. Other people can't insult anybody. Just
apparently so. Speaking of insults, and people who insult people. Have you read any of this? Did you read any of the stuff that came out yesterday about Michael Avenatti, the L.A. lawyer?
A little bit, but he got arrested for something, didn't he?
He was arrested for domestic assault.
Yeah.
And the storyline is really confused, or at least the storyline that I saw last night was really confused. Supposedly, whoever the cops talked to may not have been his wife. Everybody assumed that he had, or his ex-wife. Everybody assumed he had punched out his ex-wife, but she apparently issued a statement saying something like he would never. He's not done anything like that. Allegedly, Avenatti made some statement to the effect of, "Well, she hit me first," or something like that. It's totally crazy.
Hey, some of these girls are pretty tough these days.
Well, I would just say that we'll give Mr. Avenatti the same presumption of innocence that he did not want to give Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just bizarre. It's hard for me to imagine any celebrity getting into something like that, because you know the alarm bells ought to be going off right away. Apparently for Mr. Avenatti, but who knows? I mean, who knows? The cops apparently believe they have something credible to go on. I mean, they don't arrest people for nothing. And
well, some places they do.
Some allegation, anyway.
Well, in Chicago, they do. How many billions of dollars have we paid out to people?
I forgot about Chicago.
Yeah. How many millions are we up to, Manny, on paying people off? So get a load of this. There was an article yesterday. I was going through the Tribune. You go through it, and it becomes kind of a blur. Well, you don't even. I mean, you remember the bits and pieces, or at least I do. I don't know why that is, but it becomes somewhat of a blur. Yesterday, a guy, got a $44 million settlement from a police thing last year. The policeman is still on payroll, and the guy hasn't gotten a dime in a settlement. If I wrote a fiction book, and that was one of the chapters, people are going to say that chief guy's nuts. How could he write something like this? How could that even be?
I mean, the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago aren't even paying the people who actually perform services for them. So I guess it's not surprising that this rolls out. I thought discussion in the paper about the fact that, you know, Chicago won, Amazon didn't select it, to talk about money woes, because Chicago couldn't have paid $48,000 a job the way New York did.
They offered these guys $2.4 billion, allegedly.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking at the tax break, and my understanding is it's mainly tax breaks, but still, that's. I mean, de Blasio, you know, de Blasio made the great comment. He said, well, we had to do that. All things being equal, they would have gone to Texas.
No, they wouldn't.
I'm guessing that's right. I'm guessing they wouldn't have gone to Texas. But what I find really interesting is the lack of irony in his statement, where you're saying, so doesn't that tell you something about your business environment? And it also tells you something about the impact you're having on
wherever you were with your
not named Amazon,
wherever crummy spot you're in with your phone, you're back in it. I actually did
okay.
Some. Why don't you call back and I'll give these numbers and I'll tell you when you come back on. I'll repeat them for you.
Roger that. Stand by.
I love it when Lou does the Roger that, like he's in the plane, you know, the Air Force plane. What do you think, Manny?
I like it too.
Roger. What was it? Was that in Airplane? Roger.
Yes.
God. What, I picked a bad day to get off of amphetamines. Was that Lloyd Bridges? he still was Sea Hunt as far as I was concerned. I saw him in other stuff, but he was always going to be in Sea Hunt. You're too young for Sea Hunt. It was an underwater thing that Mike Bridges was in, or Lloyd Bridges. When Lou comes back on, I'm going to go through my little calculation. I went through Amazon's revenue for the last however long they've been around, 15 years or so, and My calculations, although raw, I'm not so bad at this. I'm going to say that they've stolen $5.4 billion in sales taxes from Virginia and New York. So the first thing you do is the little, I won't say anything bad, shows up with his hand out and you start greasing the guy. I would have arrested him. Illinois, I figure Illinois, with our population, people not paying sales tax on Amazon stuff, we just assume we have the same percentage as the rest of the country. It's cost the state of Illinois $2.4 billion in the last 15 years, which we could really use. And now we're going to offer the guy $2.2 billion. They're still not paying taxes on half their stuff, from what I understand. I mean, how are people, where do we find these people? it's like, who were the guys last week, Manny, that they gave him money to open up a store, Target. They gave Target money at one of these tax free zones or something on the north side. They just got done cutting a ribbon and giving these guys money in a tax abatement for a store on the north side. The next day they announced two on the south side are closing. Where do we hire these people?
Well, I've often thought that the motto of especially Illinois politics is something to the effect of, how stupid do they think we are? You know,
Really. Pretty stupid.
Yeah. And while you guys were, we can come back to Amazon on those numbers a little bit later, but I wanted to also address something that popped up in my Twitter feed with respect to the unveiling of a Chinese aircraft. Since you guys were making fun of my Air Force jargon, I might as well launch on this morning as well. That Chinese aircraft that displayed its missile bay.
Displayed its missile bay.
Yeah. opened up its missile bay.
All right. Missile bay, okay.
Yeah. Somebody, the Chinese apparently had a flyby with their new heavy, they call it a heavy fighter. I call it just an airplane designed around the engines that they're capable of making. But it did a flyby at one of their air shows, and it had its weapons bays open, and inside were four, their AMRAAM derivatives, our standard long range BVR, beyond visual range, engagement missile, and it's their version of it. So they were carrying four of those things internally. In addition, they were carrying two heat seekers on the outside of the aircraft, strapped to the body. And this was a big deal because we'd always speculated as to how many missiles the thing could carry and how they would carry them and the whole bit. So, I thought that was an interesting move. I mean, it's obviously designed. Anytime you see something like that, you look at it and say, okay, is this a one-off that was designed for Western intelligence to speculate on, or is this something that, you know, they actually are going to use? Whoever tweeted that out yesterday said, oh, we'll ask Lou all about this. So you guys want to fire away? Go ahead.
While people are tweeting at you, what do you make of this Brexit fiasco? Is this a market mover? I think it's a market mover in Britain, and maybe in the EU. I had a feeling that they were going to hold everybody's kind of feet to the fire on this thing. And I you know, people want it out. I think they should be out, Lou. I mean, it's
Yeah, what I find fascinating is, well, there are a couple of things about this. First of all, Macron, in his comment about nationalism, which I think was unintentionally revealing about what the EU leadership anyway thinks about in terms of their various countries. His comment about nationalism was very revealing and. If you're somebody who has any kind of sense of national value or national values or culture, tells you that the Europeans, the EU types, have absolutely no interest in that idea whatsoever. And I find it remarkable that a French leader is coming out and just basically trashing the idea of you know, there's a separate culture or values or set of values that we all ascribe to, and that's why we're Frenchmen. That's remarkable. The second thing was the establishment of this EU army, you know, which they want to run in addition to NATO. And while the idea of the Europeans picking up their own defense tabs is a good deal, I think. It's a really interesting concept to see that develop, and the idea that you would have some kind of joint, you know, force that they could do something with, and I'm not really even sure what they'd do with it. I mean, I don't think culturally Europe, Western Europe anyway, old Europe as Rumsfeld called it, I don't think culturally Europe is prepared for that kind of expenditure, that kind of sacrifice, and they certainly have the technical capability. I just don't think they could staff it adequately to make anything to be anything credible. Maybe what they're looking for is something a little less significant in terms of size, but that they could move quickly in response to you know a Russian move in Crimea or a Russian move in the Baltic states.
If the Russians piled in right now, there is no way they could count on us, I don't believe, in any timely manner.
I think if the Russians came into the Baltic states, we'd move.
We'd do what? We'd send some aircraft carriers. We wouldn't start throwing people on ships.
Yes, we would.
I don't know, boy. I don't know how these people would react in Washington now. I can't predict anything they're doing.
Well, let me just throw something out to you. My take on that is that if the Russians were to go into the Baltic states to take them back, we would immediately respond with military force. It would be a lot of aircraft. We don't have a lot of stuff on the ground there anymore, but it would definitely be aircraft. It would cause us to mobilize here. We would start shipping supplies over. we would start bolstering our... I mean, and I assume that Poland and Germany and the Brits would be telling us, get over here as quick as you can. And so I think he would see, an immediate response. What I find interesting, and this is something that I think is part of the Russian long-term strategy with their disinformation campaign and their political campaigns on social media and the like here. I think the Russian long-term goal has always been to generate such opposition to an American political figure that it is virtually impossible for them to do anything that would counter, or that they would create so much domestic unrest that it would make it very difficult to counter anything that the Russians do. So, for example, if President Trump decided that, and I think he would have to honor our commitments, if President Trump decided he was going to put forces over there, you know, I could see, you know, 100,000, you know, misguided New Yorkers. That's probably an unnecessary adjective. 100,000 misguided New Yorkers showing up at the gates of McGuire Air Force Base or Fort Dix, New Jersey, to try to block the runways. I mean, I could see that happening easily. I could see, you know, a major protest blocking access to bases all over the country, just because people think that Donald Trump's involved in it, and they would move against him. And I think that's really been the goal, or one of the goals of the Russian disinformation campaign all along, is to try to hamstring any American president, whether it was Trump or Clinton or whoever got elected, to make it very, very difficult for them domestically if they tried to do something like this. I look at what happens in places like Portland, and I think, okay, now multiply that by five or six times with a concerted, you know, effort to drive people who want to, you know, who want to demonstrate, drive them out into the streets around various military installations. You know, take a look and watch that play out.
Without having Putin listening to the show and giving him some info, what kind of condition are we in? What how long would it take 100,000 person division, or how many people are in a division, a couple of divisions, to land in Europe? 6 months?
No. I'm guessing we could move a couple of divisions over there within 45 days.
From where? Where would forts still have a whole division that's full with armor and everything
else?
Well,
you've got armored divisions at Fort Hood. You've got artillery divisions at Fort Sill. You've got mobile infantry or motorized brigades and infantry at Fort Carson. You've got a large presence at Fort Dix. You've got a large presence at Joint Base McChord. I've dumped the name of the Army installation up by Seattle. And I mean, you could move a lot of people. I mean, we're not so out of touch and so out of practice that we couldn't mobilize a large group. It would be messy, but again, they wouldn't be moving in under fire, at least not immediately. And they could, you know, we could put them into Britain, we could put them into France. But again, assuming that the EU asked for them. I think they would.
Well,
I don't think they'd have any
other
choice.
Than
the first thing going over would be aircraft.
And other than Iran, I'm not, you know, I don't know, I've gone through this Veterans Day thing, and I was going to ask you about the way we went through one generation where they didn't want to talk about wars, and another one, anybody in uniform can't wait to get on a commercial. I don't know which is right or which is wrong. I just don't know what the change is all about. But how
there's a great article. I believe it's in War on the Rocks that I put up on my class page, my academy class page on Facebook, that talks about the sacrifices made by the Vietnam veterans who stayed in after Vietnam and basically reconstructed and resurrected the armed forces of the United States. And, of course, that happened when I was a junior officer. I graduated in 1977. The all-volunteer force was, you know, I won't say in full swing because it was terrible the first couple of years. But the all-volunteer force concept was moving out. We were dealing with all of the issues that the post-Vietnam issues that had, you know, sort of permeated American culture, and to a lesser extent in the military itself. It's very gratifying to me to see, for example, my son, who was a veteran, when he was on active duty, people buying him drinks or talking to him in airports and telling him how much they appreciated what he was doing. It's very gratifying. I don't forget the fact that I was told that they were prohibited from wearing my uniform in Washington, D.C. in the 1970s because we were concerned about the reaction of the general public to seeing people in uniform. I don't forget the derision that we were subject to at various colleges where we went to play football games. I haven't forgotten that, and neither of my classmates.
Well, neither am I. I mean, my cousins did the same thing.
And when I say derision, I mean people spitting on you, throwing stuff at you.
You weren't allowed in the VFW because you didn't win, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It was a lousy time to be in uniform, and we haven't forgotten that. And the fact that it's not that way now causes a lot of us to think, yeah, but it could be, and we wonder. I mean, with this current sort of self-absorbed culture that we're in.
I'm not talking about people's attitudes. I'm not talking about that kind of attitude. Well, I just I wanted to ask you about real quick before I get into that. I think that some people here, me included, matter of fact, I'm not going to be blocking a runway. I'm not good at demonstrating, but that would be out of the last five wars. This would be war number five, where we're sending people in harm's way without any regard to what the hell we're doing. Other than Gulf War One, which was Bush One, where the idea was, and even that, there was all kinds of controversy as to whether we let Saddam Hussein let him know that it was okay for him to do what he was doing beforehand, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. But anyway, we push him out, and we stop. It seemed like there was a goal there. We did it. Now, whether it wasn't perfect, but at least the citizenry could say, we went over, we pushed these guys out of this other country, and as soon as it was over, we got basically the hell out of there, and that makes some semblance of sense. But starting from Vietnam, Afghanistan, the new Iraq, God bless. Our people have, and if we even knew about all the little wars we're fighting in Africa, I don't think our people would have any cause to say we're doing a good job. We don't know. I'm not saying tactically, I'm sure we're terrific, but we don't know what the hell we're doing. We don't know when the thing's over. We can't define when it's over. We don't even know. We can't let you know what a victory would look like. You know what? People are pissed off at that, Lou, and I am. And if all of a sudden, you know, the Russians run into the ball, okay, now what are we going to do? Are we going to invade all the way to Moscow? We're going to stop them from getting to the next country. We're going to give them what they have. I want to hear all this before we go. I'm sorry. And I don't think.
Well, you're not going to hear it before you go, before the mobilization starts, because you're not going to have time.
Okay, I understand. I don't trust Trump and his people or Hillary and their people to have fought this stuff through. These guys can't think through tomorrow's tweet.
Okay, well let's back up a little bit. The war on terror is an ongoing war
forever,
because our opponents, who are again diametrically opposed to our culture, our values, and everything else that the West and specifically the United States stands for, our goal is to keep this thing under control, so we do not face another attack on United States soil like we did on 9/11. It's an asymmetric conflict, which means the bad guys are not going to stand up and take us on toe to toe in a major engagement. They're just not.
Understand.
And so we're gonna get this nibble around the edges stuff that has been going on since the 1980s, really. And it's very much the issue that Israel's been dealing with since they kicked everybody's butt in 1973.
Well, Israel is on a constant expansion mode too, which causes a little bit of a problem.
Well, let's be honest. Israel's on an is not the kind of constant expansion. They've tried to deal with this, and again, to quote the great line about Yasser Arafat and the Palestinians, you know, Mr. Arafat was a man who never missed an opportunity to miss an opportunity.
Oh, sure.
They tried to cap this. But my point is that the Arab states that are opposed to Israel's existence are not going to take Israel on toe to toe. They're going to allow they're going to fight through the proxies of the Palestinians, allow them to blow themselves up, allow them to shoot missiles, missile attacks on Israel and all the rest of it. That's going to be allowed to occur because nobody's going to take the Israelis on head on.
Well, hold that thought, buddy. SP futures up 975, Dow futures up 95, NASDAQ up 47, kind of the same way as when we came in. We'll be right back. We're going to talk a little bit about this Brexit at some point, too, because there's people resigning over there. This thing's falling apart. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, and that's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Hines. This is Will Michaels from Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 975. Dow futures up 95. NASDAQ futures up 47. So we're making a shot at it again today. And I'm going to say one of these days we're actually going to finish in the plus. I guess one of these days, how's that for it to be like eight in a row down? It's probably, how's that for a bold assertion?
One of these days, I think you'll be right.
Yeah, one of these days, I think I'll be right. DAX down 4. Call that flat. FTSE down 4. Call that flat. With all the stuff going on with Brexit, I can't believe they're only moving $4. CAC around down 14. That's 0.3%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 42.2%. Hang Seng up 1.4%. I'm sorry, Shanghai up 35, 1.4%. Hang Seng up 448, 1.7%. As again, we supposedly have people talking. Now we're dragging Munchkin out, and he's talking to China. The White House is doing their best, but they've done this. We're talking to China thing so many times now that the market's getting sort of immune to it, which I'll talk about with Lou in a second. Like I say, yesterday the Dow Jones is down 205, S&P futures down 20, NASDAQ down 64. So we're not even half back. We are half back in the NASDAQ, but not the rest of the stuff. Oil down 2 cents, Brent up 42. So nothing. The spread is increased down to 10.30. Natural gas actually down 25 cents today to 4.58. Down 25 cents to 4.58. So it means the thing was pushing 4.80 yesterday. It's unbelievable. Meanwhile, our Bob is 155, the lowest we've seen in a while. So I think we're going to get gas maybe this weekend, what, 2.30 maybe? Somewhere in there? Home heating oil, 2.09.
Maybe in the suburbs. I don't know what city spot you're talking about.
City is always going to be 60 cents higher.
Yeah, I know. So why are you giving the suburbs prices?
Because that's where I'm going to buy mine.
Okay.
That's where I'm going to go cash my paycheck. Like the commercial. Remember the commercial? Gold down 10 cents. Silver up 2 cents after a big rally yesterday. Copper 275. So it's coming up a little bit. It's up 4 cents. So it's not as bad as when it was 260 something. So we're getting a little bit of push up into some of these metals. Maybe what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a decent start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways this morning. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy yet at this hour. Same with the Eisenhower and Stevenson, though traffic is building. South side, we have an issue. State Street northbound between 72nd and 71st is closed due to an earlier fatal crash that happened early this morning. That's also affecting the 71st Street exit off of the Dan Ryan as that investigation continues. So keep that in mind on the south side. Out in the suburbs, western suburbs, it looks like 75th Street at Route 53, there's a crash. And then well north of there on Route 53, there's another accident at Rand Road that's causing delays. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, we could see some flurries. We're not expecting any snow to actually stick, but it'll look nice from outside your window. We'll reach a high of 36, but the temps will be in the low to mid-30s all day. And like I said, some flurries in the area, but no accumulation expected. Right now it's overcast and 33 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 76 today. Right now it's clear and 45. In sports, the Blackhawks snapped their 8-game losing streak, shutting out the Blues last night 1-0. Their new coach's first win. He started out 0-3. So congrats to the Hawks. Coyotes were off. NBA action. Bulls were blown out in Boston, 111-82.
Hello, Blackhawks. Can I still get Stanley Cup tickets?
Suns blew out the Spurs at home, 116-96. And in college hoops, upset alert in South Bend, Chief. The Irish lost at home to Radford, 63-60. Loyola took care of business against Niagara, 75-62. And Arizona blew out Texas El Paso, 79-46.
Without insulting some team that just had a big night, what's a Radford?
It sounds like a dog.
See, I'm sure it's a school. No, what do you suppose they play in after this, they play a couple of teams early in the year, and I'm sure they feel pretty good about last night. They probably played very well. God, where are they even from? We'll have to look that one up.
I'll find
Radford?
Out.
Radford's in Virginia, okay. I believe.
The Radford Highlanders, Radford University. I'll find out more about it here.
I believe they're in Virginia, guys.
Well, you would know. You would
yeah,
know.
That sounds right. I was going to guess North Carolina, so right in that same area.
When you say this this war on terror, Lou, there's nobody that can debate with you.
They're in Radford, Virginia.
Well, that, yeah. I guess that would make sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Nobody's going to debate with
8,900
you.
8,900 people enrollment.
Wow. It's actually bigger than Notre Dame.
Decent-sized school. Division I basketball.
They must play what division? What's the league out there?
I'm going to find what conference.
I know they've played Duke a couple of times when Duke is doing its off conference. They don't have a bad program, but that's a real upset.
Well, the Irish are playing for the first time.
They're in the Big South.
Really? There is such a thing as a Big South, eh?
The Big South Conference.
Well, in Mike Bray's career, this is the first time he's got like three freshmen starting. Everybody. He had a senior team last year, and he had a couple guys that were fifth-year seniors, and they're pretty much all gone. So he's down to like two upperclassmen, and the rest of them are guys that sit out a year from some other place and freshmen. So I think they're going to be a little inconsistent, Lou.
The Big South, I would agree with you, Chief, and I think they'll get better as the year goes on. Has Campbell University, Charleston Southern, Gardner-Webb, who's made the tournament recently, same with Hampton,
yep,
who's made the tournament, High Point University, Longwood University, Presbyterian College, Radford University, NC Asheville, South Carolina Upstate, and Winthrop. And Winthrop is historically their best basketball school in the conference. Winthrop makes the tournament more often than anyone else.
I've heard that name for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
And all
this. The question I've got is, yeah, they're starting freshmen and they should get better. The question I've got is Duke going to get better with the people they're starting?
Yeah, and they're already scary.
Well, they've had some scary moments. They're watching them play against Army and watching some of the reaction. I think they're definitely beatable. And you know, not just by another Kentucky or Kansas team. I think they're going to have a focus on a defense issue. There's just too much attention being paid to those kids, and I'm not happy about it.
Well, I think just as Notre Dame maybe went through last night, and I didn't watch the game, but with freshmen, you often play to your competition, and you see that with Duke. When they're on national TV playing against Kentucky, they beat them by 30, and they look like an all-star team. But when they play lesser competition, then they kind of stoop to that level, and you could definitely see them getting upset, like Notre Dame did last night, and I think that happens a lot with young teams.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other factor, of course, is that Krzyzewski traditionally has his guys ready much earlier in the year. And then you know, everybody kind of figures them out, and starts playing them a lot more evenly toward the end. I just hope for the first time this year Duke may. I say this every year, but for the first time I'm hoping Duke has a bench that they can go to keep these kids off the floor, you know, more than 30 minutes a game. Let me go back to finish the thought on the veterans issue. A lot of us older guys who came in post Vietnam. Who came up at you know, right at the end of the Vietnam War and were on active duty for the end of it, and then came in on active service during the rise of the all volunteer force. I mean, I've always maintained that the thing that ended the Vietnam War was the end of the draft. Once it became a lottery system, not the end of the draft, but the end of the deferments. Once the lottery system came into place and deferment stopped, you started having the sons and daughters of almost exclusively the sons, of course, because we didn't draft women then, and we still won't. You have the sons of the scions of industry and politics and finance. All of a sudden, those kids are exposed. And they, you know, there were no more deferments. There were no more, dancing around, getting out of going in. And I think at that point, the politics changed on this. I think Nixon understood that, but I think the politics changed radically.
You think that
nobody wanted their kid in that fight. And you know, we've basically outsourced our defense obligations and outsourced that sacrifice.
So you're saying if the twins, Bushy's twins could have been drafted and gone to Iraq, the wife wouldn't have let them declare war. I'm thinking you're probably right.
I mean that's a sort of a goofy way of saying it, but if the question we have is that, you know, if you've got skin in the game, literally skin, your own skin or your kid's skin in the game, I think there's a whole different structure on our war making decisions.
By the way, the same thing happened in Rome, and the same decisions got dumber and dumber the further and further people's kids got away from the conflict.
Well, one of the gratifying things about this most recent congressional election is I'm seeing a lot more veterans coming into Congress.
Yeah, I am.
And that's a big deal for me. Veterans necessarily are smarter or anything else, but they are people who have been part of a shared sacrifice on behalf of the country, and they understand first of all working in a large bureaucracy and have the positives and negatives of that. But they also understand what it means to put people in harm's way and, you know, have your friends blown apart and, you know, the tremendous psychic and cultural costs of a you know, putting your people through combat.
Well, we had a question. By the way, two things. One I don't know the answer to, but somebody my age or older is going to know. When you talked about that with Nixon, I was right in the middle of that. My recollection was, and I've heard people tell me that I'm wrong here, which could, you know, happens all the time. My recollection was, because I was, I don't know if I was the first year of the lottery or the second, so I was 18 in 1970. All right, so I ended up with a high number. But everybody in my group, JD, who's my main man here, who actually does the trades for people, and I knew four or five other guys that essentially had to leave school and were drafted. The deal was, though, I believe, and I've heard that this is wrong, but I don't think it was, because it wasn't my year, that if you were drafted, you weren't going to Vietnam, that was the deal. And J.D. spent 2 years in Europe driving a truck, and this other, you know, another friend of mine was in Alaska being a tank commander, and I remember him having a furlough in an Eskimo village once. I don't even think they had a bar. He wasn't too happy about that. But none of the non-deferred draftees my year, I don't think, went to Nam. Could that
what year was that?
I'm going to say 19. I was 18 in 1970, November 1970.
Oh, I don't think that's right. I think
everybody tells me that, but I'm saying everybody I know that got, now the people who drafted the years or year or two before me that just plain got drafted, they went over to Vietnam and a couple of them didn't come back. But I mean, nobody I knew, my year, I was pretty confident that if I had gotten a low number, I'd have been drafted, but I wouldn't have been in Nam. Now, that maybe was the second or third year of the lottery. I don't know. Could have been. I don't recall them. I'm saying
my recollection, although, and again, I stopped caring about this stuff once I applied to a service academy. But my recollection is that the guys that were getting with low lottery numbers that were being drafted were still headed over there as late as 1973.
It might have been you weren't going to go into combat role. There was some story in there because I know. I mean, I remember I would have been a lot more concerned. I didn't want to have to leave school and everything. But if I did, I would have been not near as bad as being in a jungle shooting. But we need to research this because you guys are probably right. Cause you're like the second or third person that says I'm wrong. But I don't know that the emotion my year. I know it would have been different if I knew if I could have been in Nam. And none of the guys I knew that got drafted that were 18 in 1970 went to Nam. Did I know?
Well, let me wrap this up with because I think we should talk about Brexit. Let me wrap this up real quickly with just some thoughts on this. I firmly believe that the all-volunteer force that we have in place right now and have had in place for the last 20 years is a much better fighting force, better trained, better motivated, better skilled. They are marvelous. soldiers and sailors and airmen, and they're I've known a bunch of them. I've worked with a bunch of them. I when my kid was in that group, they are very well trained. And every one of my friends who was generals, who became a general, said we don't want to go back. We don't want to go back to the draft. We're better off with the force we've got right now. But if we had to institute a draft, and every male citizen and in this country over the age of 18 has a selective service card or a selective service number, if we go back to instituting a draft because we get into a meat grinder of combat either in Europe or in Asia somewhere, I really wonder how that would play out. The second thing is, in this culture, you know, one of the great, and I see the Army and Marine Corps has always kind of done this, but the Army's starting to do it now, and I won't be surprised if the other services do as well. We have very few challenges for young men that allow them to go out and, you know, quote, prove their manhood or assert that they've done something, you know, they've done something that makes their peers look up to them. And to the extent that the military becomes that and becomes that way of way of doing that, it really opens up service to a much wider group of people that are motivated to come in on their own and to do it. There's a great quote from a book called Young Men and Fire, and Maddie can find this. It's by the guy who wrote A River Runs Through It, the English professor at the University of Chicago, whose name, of course, I've dumped now.
Norman MacLean.
That quote talks about, you know, challenging the universe. And as long as we've got, you know, young men who are looking at that, and young women too, but it's mostly men who are looking at doing that, then the military becomes an attractive option, and we will continue to have a high quality of people going in and a more economically diverse group of people coming in. And I think that's absolutely necessary. I will tell you that I was actively discouraged from joining the military when I was in high school. My teacher said, no, you don't want to do that.
Yep.
It's a disaster. I don't think you see that quite so much anymore.
I was sent a whole bunch of stuff from all four of the academies, and I was like, you know, throw that away.
I was told that, too. I was discouraged, but in the late 90s.
Yeah, now I'm thinking maybe the Naval Academy would be kind of neat.
By the way, Norman MacLean is the author, Lou.
Yep.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry. I love that guy's work, and I should never have forgotten it. But if you want to read an interesting book, Young Men in Fire is it. But the quote about challenging the universe from Young Men in Fire is something that applies just as much now as it did when he wrote it, when he was talking about the smoke jumpers who are the subject of that book.
Lou, real quick, one comment on that.
You got time to talk about Brexit?
Yeah, but give me one comment on it. I would be very much, I would like to see it on a small scale first to see if it worked. I would very much like to see a one-year somewhat of a service program where you maybe did some kind of a halfway boot camp, learn how to shoot, learn some basics of the Army in case you ever needed you. You at least wouldn't be starting from scratch. Learn how to do some environmental stuff. At the end of the year, maybe you could stay on if you wanted to or go right back. I would be very much in favor of something like that. And I'm not saying you should be drafted into it, but I think it would help a lot of kids in some of these neighborhoods that maybe aren't so hot. I think we could do a lot of stuff like this if we put our mind to it.
Well, we've talked on the show. Do you know what the most successful schools, other than those college prep schools in Chicago, you know what the most successful high schools in terms of graduation rates are in Chicago? They're the junior ROTC schools.
Yeah, yeah.
Chicago's got five or six JROTC programs in high schools. They are very successful, and they're also the number one. They're funded out of Department of Justice funds, because they are the most effective way of stopping kids from getting into drugs or gangs.
Ray, we have a few minutes for Brexit. I want to ask you a quick question. As I was reading back through Marshall's book the other day, because I was doing some stuff on World War One. Actually, all kinds of stuff here to talk about. Lou, not much time. I don't know. I'm not going to criticize anybody. I just don't know what's right. I mean, George Marshall's view of the world was war was a really awful thing. You wanted to be really good at it, because if you ever had to do it, you wanted to get in and out, kill as minimum people as possible, have as minimum people a year as possible, have them the best equipped, and never have to do it again and never talk about it. It was a the fact that there was a war, I mean, a lot of politicians basically bleeped up, and you had to clean up their mess. And the guys from World War II, that I knew, Lou, there was a time when a lot of the fathers on the trading floor all you know, passed away. And, you know, as my parents did, we were all sort of the same age. And, boy, you'd go to these guys' wakes, Lou, and there's all these medals laid out there. And one guy, I stood next to the guy for years. I ran into him last night. I don't know, his dad was a destroyer captain. I don't even think he did. You know, I mean, the thought of Audrey's dad at age 95, he made it to 97 or something. And by the way, his uniform still fit. The thought of him putting his uniform on and going standing up there at a Hawk game, he would have said, "What are you, out of your friggin' mind?" And yet now, this is it, everything. It's in everybody's commercial. You know, I mean, come buy a car from us because we support Joe in the Army. And there's Joe's face there. I'm like, well, when did all this happen? I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just so different. How did the mentality change? I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong at all. I'm just saying it's so different.
Well, I think what you're seeing is a backlash to that volunteerism. I mean, we all understand that the kids that are serving now volunteered for it. The kids that are coming back with one leg or that were killed or damaged psychologically, they volunteered for that stuff, and they took on a burden that we all sort of understand is supposed to be
shared.
Right. And so I think there's an appreciation of that. Whether it's spoken or unspoken, but I think everybody says, you know, thank you for your service. Well, you know, to the extent that it means that you're going, so my kid doesn't have to go.
You ought to show
some gratitude for that. And when it was a draft issue, everybody kind of looked at each other and said, we all got drafted. We all had to go. You know,
have to go. A lot of people got out of it. Real lot of people. You joined the reserves. You did this. You did that.
I'm talking about World War II.
By the way, there was a lot more corruption in that draft than there was.
If you read the accounts of the court trials and things like that, there were a lot of shenanigans. But the idea of a shared sacrifice was very much there. And when it was over, everybody just said, "Yeah, it was horrible," but everybody had to do it. There was a huge cohort of us that had to do it. And we're not really going to worry about the guys on the fringes. There was a huge cohort of us that did it. We all did it. We all look at each other, and we move on.
All right, Lou. Brexit. What is this thing? Today it's blowing up, and everybody quitting. Yesterday, we talked about it yesterday morning. You know, the big sticking points of the big Europe is the EU is basically putting her finger on this lady's eye is the Ireland situation.
Northern Ireland. Yeah. Well, they don't want a hard border across Northern Ireland, and they don't want to make Ireland an EU state and Northern Ireland a not EU state,
right?
Because nobody's really contemplated what it means to have a land border there that's going to have a customs issue, and the fact that you've got a contiguous border there means that the opportunities for smuggling and migrant movement and everything like that are going to be significant. You could suddenly find Northern Ireland turned into the smuggler's capital of the universe.
Except you got to get there by boat or plane. It's not like you can get to Ireland like you can get here from Mexico.
Correct, but the Brits, the British government is not happy about the idea that we're going to have this EU state butted up against this other EU state, and how's that going to work going across the borders? They don't want that hard border, and the Irish people don't apparently either.
Okay, but the quid pro quo seems to be something called an economic union, which is almost where they still have to do all the same stuff on the different products and all the other stuff that people voted that they wanted out of.
That's what's causing the resignation.
Yeah.
Is that the compromises that May has apparently entered into that keep England, keep Britain in that customs union are totally unacceptable to the people who voted for Brexit. And really what she's trying to do, I think, is avoid the hard break. And I think her cabinet, a number of her cabinet ministers are saying, you know, Madam Prime Minister, if the EU is not going to negotiate with us, then the heck with them. We are going to pull out. We're not going to pay anybody anything. They can sue us, and we're going to go our own way. We'll put hard trade barriers in place.
But that's,
and, and we'll go.
But that's probably not where they want to go. There's like you were on God, it was a while ago when they first voted for this thing. There's the Swedish model, which means they pretty much have totally economic union stuff back and forth without tariffs and that kind of thing. There's the Canadian union, which is a little softer than that, and then there's the one with the U.S. where there's tariffs all over the place. So I mean, if you're right there, you want to be in the Swedish model, not the U.S. model. Canada at worst, and the EU, knowing that, is what's making this very hard for them. Plus, this new thing they put them in, this economic union, they can't get out, and that's what people are like. Wait a minute, we can't get out if we don't like it.
That's right.
The fourth story is you can't. I'm with the people that are, even though I really like Theresa May, I think she's this is not a good deal.
No, I think it's a terrible deal given what they voted for initially. The lack of the loss of sovereignty is a huge issue,
yeah,
for the Brits.
I would agree.
And this, the deal that she's cut, actually fails to address that in a number of crucial ways. I think what you're seeing is the Brits looking around. London is a you know, the financial hub of Europe, for better or worse. I mean, Germany's got a lot going on in Frankfurt, but London is the deal place. And I think the Brits are looking at that, and if I were them, I'd be saying, you know what, go ahead, cut us off. We can still, the deals are still going to flow through London.
Well, the Ireland thing is a problem.
I mean, it is.
I don't think anybody thought that was, when I was going through all the details, I was stunned to find out that was the, basically the sledgehammer they were holding over her head.
Yes.
I would never have guessed that.
And so the Irish, you know, once again, the Brits are looking around going, oh God, it's the Irish.
Oh yeah,
again.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's going to be, they're going to have to figure out a way to deal with that, and that's become a focal point in the press. But I think the sovereignty issues are much more crucial. And I think at some point, you know, she could be easily facing a no confidence vote today.
Oh yeah.
If they don't come to grips with this, I think that you could be looking at a very, very hard Brexit.
They had a guy on CNBC. And I love the Brits because they're pretty much, they'll tell you exactly what they're thinking. They're not afraid, which I love about them. And this guy was on, and the British guy who's on CNBC was, you know, well, this is a thing. We got to get this deal together. We want the markets to go. And the guy goes, we don't care about the markets. We voted out on these people. We don't want them controlling us. What part of we voted out don't you get? And the guy's like, well, you know, she's doing the best. I don't care.
Yeah.
That's what we voted.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's crazy.
What part of exit don't you understand?
Yeah, yeah. But there's not, when you also do 90% of your business essentially with a group of people, you don't want exit on that either. So I mean, the people who are saying what part exit don't you get? I mean, there's a lot to be said in there. The devil is always in the detail, Lou, as they say. You know.
Well, this is a classic example of a politician or political leadership failing to draw some lines and say, this is where we're not going to go. They didn't do that, or their leadership didn't do it. I think the British public did.
Well, we also have the Economic Union, or the European Union, wanting to make this as miserable as possible so nobody else ever pulls it. Well,
sure.
You know, screw that,
sure,
too. I mean, you know, screw that as well, in my mind. I mean, right?
Yeah. If I'm the Brits, I go. Listen, you got your own problems. Make you know, just clean up your own ship. But we're not playing ball with you just so you can look good to the rest of your membership.
Well, which is what they're trying to do. I mean, and there's no doubt that, and a lot of this is the European Union is for Germany and France to lock in customers. I mean, we're not shipping. President Trump is. We railing about dairy products to Canada. We ship a hell of a lot more to Canada than we do to Italy. All their stuff comes from Germany.
Yeah, yeah. I know. And that's again, the economic impact of Brexit when it was first announced was going to be significant for the Brits in the short term. But everybody kind of thought in the long term they'd be better off. I don't think. As push comes to shove, I don't think the leadership in Britain has really come to grips with the fact that they're going to be short term hits, and they haven't done a good job of explaining that or selling that.
Well, a lot of the people who look at the term exit as one word don't understand it's a big word. Lou, thank you, buddy. I'll talk to you next week. SP futures up 350. Manny, we're coming south again here. The dead cat is not bouncing. The Dow up 35, NASDAQ down 26. That's like half as much as when we came in. Be right back with Mr. Faryhamzy. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Lou, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley. Mr. Miller. Manny, you finally got us. Lou. Fari, how are you?
Manny, how are you?
All right, Manny got us on the air just in time. The futures are still up a buck. Dow futures only up four. They were dropping the entire break.
Well, I'm not worried about the futures. I'm worried about the Trumpkins.
Oh, the Trumpkins.
Well, yeah, listen, every day gets mad. And, you know, when Tico said it about 3 months ago, there's a blue tsunami. They said it won't even be a blue wave. Really? Okay.
Well, as the votes come in, yeah, you're looking more and more correct, Fari.
Like 41 now. Not me. Excuse me. Not me. Captain Tico.
Sorry, Captain Tico.
Let's give credit where it's due. I'm just a chauffeur here.
Well, Mr. Matt Weber now has reached the point where he has his million-dollar 401k, and he's concerned about the market going down. When I met him, he didn't have a 401k.
I've lost all my money this week.
See? Yeah, well, you know, we our PMT Pearl clients were long put spreads. Hello? So you sit next door. What happened to you?
That's Larry a good question.
That's a good question.
That's a good question.
You, Barry is short. You should be buying long puts.
His girlfriend asks him that once a week. What happened to you?
Well, I get asked that a lot, not just by her. But it's clear
here is the issue. We go up 40, we start positive in the, overnight, then we, for like, 30 points, and then we drop 100 points. Look at the NQs, for example, which the future is, the technology. So again, we rally on the average, like maybe 30 points at night. Then we open up, you wait 10 minutes on the average, 15 minutes, then they sell the damn thing. And you cover at the end of the first hour, about 9:30 your time, and you're done for the day. You go to the beach. Look at that pattern. What is that? And then, of course, at the end of the day, we'll turn we have closed negative for the day. So what does that tell you?
Well,
sustaining operations.
Well, we're going up every day, Fari.
Long players, which is majority of our investors are. So at one point, as what we call the death crosses line up, death crosses when the 50 bar gets below 200. We just hit that, 2 days ago, or Monday was it. We talked about it on Russell, and we warned last week, watch that. Russell came in, now the next one is transportation. As these line up, you're going to get NDX, you're going to get SPX. When we go to that point, by covenant, a lot of money managers have no choice. Just hit the sell orders, because if they don't, not that they won't get any bonuses, they may not be asked to come to work January 1st.
So
the selling hasn't started yet. This is just a preview, my friend.
I'm not so sure, Fari, I've ever in all my... Every time is different. That's why I'm always quick to try and...
The events are different.
Yeah, I always try and outline the history of the market moves as best I can, because I was there. And you can pick up from all of them a little bit, but they're not always the mirror image coming forward. I don't think I've ever seen a sell-off kind of like this one where there were...
Well, near a perfect storm.
But I'm saying there's so many different items in play.
Yeah, this time, I subscribe to that. I agree with you on that. We have so much different factors coming in all at once. This is reminds me of a movie, Perfect Storm, and and we got exactly the wrong guy in charge to handle an array of avalanche of bad news. My dad was known at the Imperial Iranian Air Force as one of the guys at the headquarters to really think the best and clearest when things got bad. When things were normal, he was somewhere else. When things got really, really, really bad, this is the guy with clear thinking. This is what type of guy you need here. I'm not saying my dad, but there's somebody like that where... In the politics side, not the Air Force operations, but under a lot of pressure, clarity come in. I know a few traders in Chicago who were very good at that. And normal days, they're useless. They're just not a trader. We need somebody like that. Look at the array of issues hitting us. Debt, China, Russia, election concerns, healthcare, the mother, on the conservative side, where I stand, now we have third party. I mean, we have GOP was hijacked. We're going to have all kinds of disputed elections going forward because we really have three parties out there now. You got the classic GOP, you got the Dems, and you got the Trumpkins. He's not going to go away. He's not going to roll. He won't get reelected. I think it's his one term presidency. Bannon said it right. There's no path. There's no path. Why? He won by electoral college of three states, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, with 80,000 votes. That's done. All of them flipped. The Democratic governors. A governor race is a very indicative of the statewide mood overall, and they flipped. So I think we're in for some heavy-duty volatility. As an index trader, this is heaven. It's like paradise. If somebody just wrote me a check from paradise, I love it. So enjoy while it lasts. Otherwise, you can go back to 2017 where you couldn't make any money other than you bought on hope.
Yeah, you bought on hope. But you look at the money that is wandering around, and you're right. Mm-hmm. We've got debt issues, and we've got incredible.
Mm-hmm. Look at GE bonds.
Yeah.
If GE bonds is not giving you a wake up call, I don't know what it's going to give you.
Well, you've got some companies that have been able to have, you know, they have pricing power and they've done incredibly well. I mean, look at the medical area and look at the incredible concentration. Well, you're at the point where you can't. And my strength and weakness. Why is every strength you have always your big weakness, Ferry? Is that I always look at all these things coming together in the same spot.
Correct.
But also, it's also kind of hard to figure out which one you want to attack first because they're all hitting at the same time. You know, which alligator around the boat do you shoot first when they're all nipping at your heels?
Exactly. Listen, that's how accidents happen also. You know, when you do airworthiness studies on aircraft, it's accident happens of a catastrophic nature. Happens because a series of critical path failures. So more than one. They line up and then overwhelms the system, overwhelms the people, and you're done. You're cooked. We're slowly approaching that. I mean, he doesn't go to a cemetery Marine Corps cemetery where, Kelly went and Dunsforth went. On the 100th day of 100 year anniversary of World War One, come on!
This guy's pretty good.
He was afraid of rain. Give me a break! No! He's not in a good mood. He's withdrawn.
He's totally. That's what I've been reading.
I think he's hitting one of his really low notes. Low events. Because if you look at how that mentality works. Is awesome good at high highs and is terrible, terrible at low lows. Where if you want to be at the therefore he could be a very bad trader. Okay, look at his casinos. Look at his stock. It's just not everything he touches goes bad, and who knows what Mueller knows. We haven't heard, by the way, we haven't heard anything from Bob Mueller yet. And you still have three names on the table.
Roger Stone,
Jared, and Don Jr.
Well, in the immortal words of Matty Weber yesterday, who's becoming. Remember when he was real young and didn't like know a hell of a lot, and all of a sudden he's like contributing some huge
sage.
Thoughtful thing, and now he's becoming almost like sage-like.
Yeah.
He must be like
and
the.
He has very poor leadership traits. You know, you pull the nation together at troubling times. Look at what he said about California. It didn't even make sense.
But what I'm saying, Farhi, is we've had all this stuff sort of sticks to my mind.
What did I say, Chief?
You were talking about yesterday. You were talking about some of the retirement thing. I thought what you were talking about yesterday was started a whole conversation. It was something bizarre.
God, I don't know.
We'll have to go through the tape, whatever it was, I remember it as being smart. So
thank
there.
You.
But to me, I guess everything sort of comes together. You can't have like this tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
You turn around and you have
what tax bill?
The one a year ago. That
you're done.
But I'm saying.
Give it all back.
Oh, yeah. Maddie,
look at the numbers.
Manny, I don't know.
Look at the market.
I understand.
We give it all that back. That's gone. That's the thing that some people can't understand. Because, listen, here's my hashtag IQs matter.
That's not what I'm
remember
talking
about.
Remember
I talked about last year?
Maddie,
if we want to vote over the year before, it should be the voting, and I know you guys laughed at me because the fascist comment. Excuse me. I went to a fascist school. So that's my problem. I admit it. But the vote should not be one man, one vote. It should be IQ adjusted. These Trumpkins don't get it. The tax cuts are history.
No, what I'm talking about, you brought out the article yesterday, Manny, now I remember, where they were supposed to change. It was sold that it was going to change corporate behavior, and it hasn't. Remember you told
it hasn't.
That's right.
Exactly.
And that's what you brought up yesterday. And the interesting part is you have to look at where your money, not only your money is, Farhi, but where your potential money is. And you learn that in Chicago. If you let somebody, if you're mayor or senator, and you let somebody get a contract for the Dan Ryan, it's
right.
$10 million too much.
Right.
You know that you have, I'm going to say, $5 or $6 million now in your wealth pocket that I can call you and say, Farhi, Matty Weber is running for judge. I need you to buy 10 tickets.
Yeah.
And you're going to go buy them. And I'm going to do it on the phone. I'm not going to do it by text. I'm not going to do it by email like some moron.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it on the phone. Or you and I are going to have dinner someplace. We're going to check under the table. And I'm going to say, you got to buy tickets for Matty Weber's judgeship. And you're going to do it. So, but you can't, when you bring this stuff back from these companies, you've given them you can't take an old person, okay, lower the taxes of a corporation, and then kick some stuff back to the states to where all of a sudden the state raises their property tax
And all by the same time, even though you campaigned on prescription drugs, you can't have this old couple now paying $2,000 a month for prescription drugs when a year ago or 2 years ago they were paying $500. Yeah. You can't get blood out of a turnip, as the Irish say. There's no potential. You can't then go to them and say, "We're raising your income tax." I got nothing left. Raise it all you want. There's nothing in the kitty. I mean, we've allowed this change where I don't think we have this depth of resources that we should have here, because we've let certain people absolutely, you know, denut entire generations, be it education, be it healthcare. Mm-hmm. God help you if you're a family that has somebody in the family. How many families you think in this country have had somebody get cancer or something, and brothers and sisters have all contributed to this, and the total wealth of the family's gone. For what? Mm-hmm. For treatment, yes, which you'll do for anybody. Everybody would go on credit card for their brother or their cousin, or even for you, for God's sake. But what I'm saying is, why should everybody have to pay $20,000 for a treatment that costs somebody two? Yeah. I mean, five maybe. I get it, but 20, 30, 50? I mean, you can't let this stuff happen and still expect your population to be able to respond in a crisis. There's nothing there to respond to.
Correct. Look how many bankruptcies we have because of medical expenses.
It's basically medical expenses.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even Kevin. Well, Kevin, you know, Kevin is to the right of a lot of stuff. But Kevin says, "What are you talking? What was his comment yesterday, Manny? 17 years. If you can't steal enough money back on a patent in five, you're a horrible businessman."
I think he said, "You suck."
Yeah, you suck. I don't know if you heard that, Brian. He goes, "If you can't steal enough back in 5 years, you suck."
Yeah. You shouldn't need 17 years.
And how did they manage to get 19 out of Viagra? What was the other 2 years for? Some legal maneuver. 17 wasn't enough? And yet, how much did that cost? How much does that cost the NFL, Matty? $40-50 million
It's improved the viewing experience, though. Good God. Oh, every other commercial is no longer Cialis and Viagra, which is...
I'll tell you what, though.
Good God.
That was too much, wasn't it?
You know what, though? Viagra got a lot better. For a long time, they never had any women in it. And once they did, they had some serious eye candy. I got to admit that.
Yeah, but every other commercial. Yeah.
I know.
I mean, for God's sake.
Awkward,
like, guy smiling, and I mean, I just couldn't take it.
I like the one where the lady had how many suitcases that had to cost $1,000 a piece, and the guy's got the one leather valise, and she's shoving the pills in it. But I mean, to listen to Shanny tell me how he had to explain that to his kids after a Super Bowl. What's erectile dysfunction? And the kids are like eight, and he goes, I don't care how many breasts Janice Jackson loses. They've all seen a breast. Nobody knew what erectile dysfunction was.
Yeah.
So far, Eddie, this is kind of the flip version. When we were going up every day, every morning,
we're in left transition mode, which is we drop, drip, 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 drip. Then we come up a little bit, a couple of bars, and then started dripping down. As a matter of fact, the dripping is the problem because you're not getting it into a capitulation. How do we recognize that volume? Volume is not that huge. It's just drip, 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 drip. You know, we get occasionally certain hours of the day, we get a little of a blip in a volume, but then it goes back.
Yeah.
Drip, 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 drip. It just selling. Listen today is FB. Now it's Facebook. They cover. Every day is something else out there.
Every day.
Which is these points?
Something negative.
You know, is it politics? Is it text? Is it healthcare? Is it elections? Or a national debt. None of these. There's no good news out there. There's just problem news. And I think at some point you're going to throw the baby with the bathwater. And we're fast approaching that. One area I look for again is what the charts are showing, not what I think, not what I want to think, not my intuition says. No, look at what the charts are doing. Because every trade there is a vote by a bunch of people, right? You put a trade in, there's a buyer, there's a seller, maybe there were a couple of buyers, maybe several sellers, whatever. Look at it and see what it is. When those death crosses start showing up, remember, we haven't had death crosses in a couple of years, okay? In a long run-up in the economy, okay? This economy, let me remind you, in March 9th, 2009 was the low, was SPX was 666.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, guess I was watching last night, Big Short. I was watching Big Short because my buddy Gil Caffrey ran Front Point, is the boss of Sam Eisen, that played as Mark Balmer or something, as the main character holding the Front Point position, as they shorted the market. So We have had a huge, and I remember what he was going through back then, because you know, 2 years went against them, and then we hit the bottom, and then took they took off, and we had to build from the bottom up. You go from 666 to 2,940.
Yeah,
that's a very long run. Huge momentum. Pent up demand, near disaster, or near ultimate disaster, and then we build up. We build up. We start getting more payroll jobs. Now begin to get a little bit of wage growth. Okay, but look what transportation is showing us. Look what Russell is showing us. This is very late stage.
Well, if you go back,
they're discounting the future. They're saying we could be heading down.
If you go back
6 months, a year from now.
20 years, sorry, all the way back to long-term capital, which, thank God, we were in the
protected index. Right,
We had everybody
October 6th, 1998, yes.
Yeah, that's when we started the protected index program, and everybody else got clobbered, and we were down a little bit, and we made it all back because we had the puts and rolled them.
Oh, I remember that month, between August 30th and October 6th, or October 8th, I'm sorry. August 30th, which was a Monday, to October 8th, which was, I believe, a Thursday, I must have lost 20 pounds.
Well, but every
the stress was so heavy.
Well, sure.
Those are unusual times. And those are the two calls. If you went short then and covered on October 8th, you probably made the year.
Well, but you had central banks for people. There was a problem. People started selling off. All of a sudden the market, then once you start selling off, you get margin calls. It tends to feed on itself.
Only day that the market was closed intraday with 550 down.
Yeah.
I remember.
Yep.
You know why? Because I was long S&Ps.
Yeah, well, you do remember.
I sat down. That dinner was MTA dinner. Linda Rashke was there and says, Larry, you need to hold it. You need to hold the first hour. I said, what? She goes, yes. Either you're throwing the towel and you're done, or you're going to hold through the tomorrow morning first hour. We drop another 150 points in the first hour.
But that's
she was right. That was the low. You buy that low, and then it took off.
Okay, but what I'm saying,
Saturn V.
That has been the pattern on every single one of these sell-offs. Okay, and they've been...
those are a strong sell-off. You had V-bottoms. Do you see a V-bottom here?
That's exactly where I'm going with this, if you give me a chance. Is that every other one has been... There's been a problem. Argentina, Russia... you name it.
The year before that.
Yeah, there's a problem. Somebody forgot their pants. Somebody forgot their shoes. Whatever the problem is, it's 3 weeks, 4 weeks. It's a week. It's a month. And all of a sudden, there's some sort of a declared victory.
They're waiting for somebody to fold.
But the Fed turned that around for long-term capital. Because
they had a different balance sheet.
They admitted it to me, and they bought spoos ahead of it, and they also. They did a discount rate cut on an expiration in the OEX.
Yes, I remember
that. They did that. So, so we do this V-shaped bottom. Everybody's convinced, because that's the last 20-year history, that everyone's going to be like that. I mean, listen to the people all day long. All they talk about is another week, another 5%, and oh, by the way, we rally all the way to the end of the year. Yet I can remember before 98, because I started way before then, and I remember when I was investing long before I was a trader, is you could have bought something in 1968 and a couple other times when you just bought some crap and the stock was 60 and it just kind of churled its way down to 40 and 10 years later it was still 40. I'm wondering if we're not going to have a 15-20% correction here. No big washout, no big anything.
Well, in the 60s, we had one of the greatest economies.
Yeah.
We sat there for what, 10 years? Same level?
Well, the interest rates were going up. I think we might be, I hope to God I'm wrong, I think we might be in for one of these. We trickle down 15-20%, nothing huge, and all of a sudden 2 years from now, we're still sitting there.
It could be, it's called repricing. We got repriced.
I think we're just going to reprice.
The problem is, in fact, you just brought this up. The problem is what I call the Murray and Murray show. My friend Murray and his wife, Mrs. Murray, in Beverly Flats, that's their main concern. And this is typical. I'm using it as an example. Look at the yield curve. Rate on the short term, five to 10 and 30.
Farrar, you got a minute.
If these things uptick with the current deficit situation, remember, we have to refund We have to keep on refunding. The New York Fed will be overwhelmed. What if the Chinese don't show up next time?
Well, that's right. Hey, you mentioned it earlier. You got 30 seconds.
What are you seeing in the bond market? You mentioned G. Is the bond market getting? I don't watch that as much as you do. What's going on there, real briefly?
We're pulling back on the treasuries. I'm not tuned into corporates yet. The one that popped today was this GE thing. That I think it'll take more than just GE, but if we start keep on missing revenues, we got a problem.
What's
Remember, earnings you can manipulate. Revenues you can't because you have auditors.
Farah, hey, next week, what do you say we spend at least 5 minutes on the bond stuff, because it is a bigger market than the stocks.
I'll study it, sure.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. Have a good day trading. SP Futures down 1.25. Come back, Mr. David Adelman. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holland, Mr. Matt Weber, on board with Mr. David Adelman in a second, talking about markets. S&P futures down 75 cents, Dow futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 15. Your rally has gone south, Mr. Weber.
Yeah, I've given up all my money this week that I've made over the last 3 or 4 years. So that's good.
Yeah, so at least now, you know, we're pretty strong when we came in, and now we're not so.
It's been like that every day, and we closed triple digits down.
I know. So who are these guys buying it overnight? It's hopeful dudes, I guess. DAX up 15.1%. FTSE up 8.1%. Not much going on over there, considering all this Brexit shenanigans going on today. CAC around down 20.4. We got ministers quitting. They don't like Theresa May's plan that she worked out with the EU, and it's not Brexiting enough. And the big flying ointment is Ireland, which I would not have guessed, but then again. Nikkei down 42.2%. Shanghai up 35.1%. Hang Seng up 448.1.7. These guys are still reacting to the administration yesterday. We're all talking again. We're all going to be fine. Coming G20. I don't know if I'd buy that, but anyway, that's the story. And everybody's worried about that. I mean, to the upside, if you're short, that's what you think is going to happen. They're going to cut a deal with China. We're going to run back and be up at the end of the year. We're going to be, you know, new records again. We'll see. But I don't know about this. Is that going to happen? Oil up 12 cents. Brent up 53. So that spread is now $10.30 today. Natural gas, get a load of this, down 26 cents to 457. You even thought it was maybe we're near 457 2 months ago? Our Bob 155, that's going the wrong way. If you consider natural gas going up, anyway, it's sort of the same product. Home heating oil, unchanged at 2.09. We've got gold is unchanged, silver up 2 cents. Anybody got for us traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. All kinds of issues, especially to the south of the city where we have snow falling and accumulating. I've seen pictures to prove it down in the south suburbs and south of the Chicago area.
Like a bunch of white stuff?
It looks like white stuff. In the city, we have some flurries, but nothing's sticking. But down there, it's sticking, and it's affecting the roads. I-80 westbound in Joliet just before Richard Street, we have a rollover crash that's causing all kinds of congestion and issues on I-80 westbound in Joliet, so keep that in mind. Tri-State Tollway down near I-80, looks like 294 right at 80 southbound just before Chicago Road. There's a crash blocking the two left lanes that has expected delays of up to 30 minutes as you try to navigate that area. Just north of there, the Bishop Ford I-94 outbound just before Sibley Boulevard, there is a crash. And north of there, Dan Ryan outbound right before the Bishop Ford Expressway. There's an accident that's been moved to the shoulder. The right lane getting onto the Bishop Ford from the Dan Ryan is blocked. So all kinds of delays on the south side. And I assume it's mostly due to the weather situation. First sort of accumulated snowfall of the year down there. And that's causing all kinds of issues. Up north, no big deal. Stevenson, normal traffic volume. Same with the Eisenhower. Kennedy and Edens are, you know, certainly packed with traffic, but no accidents or issues to report. Suburban tollways look okay as well. Off the expressways in the western burbs, we have a crash. Looks like a 75th at Route 53. That's for an earlier crash, and they're still working on getting that cleared up, but everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, as I mentioned, we'll have some flurries in the city, but not expecting much for accumulation. But to the south and southwest of the city, expect an inch or two of snow, and it looks like that's already started. We'll reach a high of just 36, but we'll be in the low to mid-30s all day with flurries and cloudy skies. Right now, it is overcast and 33 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 76 today. Right now, it's clear and 46. In sports, Blackhawks snapped their 8-game skid, shutting out the Blues 1-0 last night. NBA basketball, Bulls were blown out in Boston 111-82. Suns beat the Spurs 116-96. College hoops, big upset in South Bend. The Irish lost to Radford at home 63-60. Loyola beat Niagara 75-62. And Arizona blew out UTEP 79-46. Chief.
We have to give our winner. David, how are you?
I'm fine.
We have to give our winter driving tips, like we do every year.
Now, this are these if you're an SUV owner,
yes,
or a non-SUV owner?
If you're
owner.
An SUV
okay.
owner.
Yes, this is important.
The first thing you do is you check your tires. If they say all season or something like that, it means just that. And if you're SUV, you've got four-wheel drive. Now, you've paid for this privilege. Regardless how bad the roads are, you can do 75 even if other people are doing 30. Just remember that. That's what you paid for. And do not slow down under any circumstances, because it says all season, they mean all season.
And you're, you know, a bigger car than everyone else, so
yes.
if you ram somebody, that's fine. If you drive them off the road, that's fine also. That's
yes.
their fault that they don't have the SUV and the big all-season tires. So when the traffic around you is going, you know, 25 because of the conditions, you have no issue going 65 or 70.
Especially if the shoulder is all full of snow and everybody's 25 in the one lane that, like, has been salted, you go right to the shoulder. That's what you paid for, and go about 80.
Yes, you can absolutely do that. That's not a problem at all.
Yes.
And then if God forbid, you can't get around the people in front of you, it's okay to ride their ass the whole time.
Yes.
Because, you know, if they do have to stop suddenly, you're not going to crash into them from behind because you have all-season tires.
You have all-season tires, and you have a horn, and use that as much as you can. So how's that, David, for Drinner wiving tips from Stocks and Jacks? Is it pretty accurate or what?
I guess.
Yeah, see?
I don't know. I don't have a SUV anymore.
How can you show your face?
You're not a manly man unless you have a huge SUV or I
had one
or a big
and I said back to a car. I want to feel the road again.
Okay.
See, I'd much rather drive a small car because it actually feels like you're driving.
You're feeling the road, you're seeing the curbs near you. I mean, they say, oh, well, when you're up high, you know, you see everything. To me, you're further away from everything. I'd rather be right on top of it.
Now, Maddie, you rode in my red 3/4-ton pickup.
I've driven it.
You've driven it. Did you ever feel the road in anything more than you did in that thing? You felt the road in that, David. You felt every bump. If you had a filling, it came out, for God's sake. Hey, what's with the retail sales up 0.8%? I'm going to say a good 0.5 of that, 0.6 is all inflation, but that's me on my little inflation kick. But what do you make of this? How come we've got the dollar going up because the pound's going down with this Brexit thing? Those guys are this is a tough fight over there. I mean, I don't see it in any of the European markets this morning, but just not yet another little wrinkle.
Ireland.
Yeah,
Ireland. Because Northern Ireland is the dissenter, and they're trying to pull a power play and threatening to go it alone and blah, 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 blah. And the Irish index was down 2%.
So they would have to put Southern Ireland is all right, explain to me what exactly is happening here. One of them is staying with the EU, Southern Ireland, correct?
Right.
Northern Ireland is allegedly with the Brits. So if
providing they get the deal they want. If not, they want to just be their own, maybe even go back to the EU. That's what they're threatening.
Well, okay, but I'm saying right now, the prospect of essentially a whole bunch of border crossings, because Northern Ireland would be with Britain and Southern Ireland would be with EU, so you'd lose the capability of the single passport and crossing all the different borders. You'd have to have essentially a border wall on that land thing, sort of like Trump wants, and you'd also have to have a border wall essentially in the Irish Sea, which of course would be a royal pain in the ass for those people over there, and I'm sure that's not what they really want, but that is the detail of this thing splitting out. It's almost like if Scotland voted out of Britain and said they still wanted to be in the EU, you'd essentially have to have this border between Scotland and England that would be the same as our border between us and Mexico, right? Isn't that the problem?
I don't know the answer to that. I suppose they could have checkpoints rather than a wall. I don't know the answer.
Well, I'm saying the equivalent. But therein lies the rub. Right now you can go from Ireland to Northern Ireland whenever you feel like it, right?
Right.
And now that's not and the European Union is holding this Irish piece as a wedge over, as an axe over, it's sort of an axe now, and everybody quit in Theresa May's head.
Right.
And the quid pro quo is, if you want this border the way it used to be, you've got to join this economic union, which you can't vote out of. It's almost the same thing as the old thing was. And oh, by the way, all the products and everything are still under the authority of the group in Belgium, which is exactly the group they want to separate themselves from. Is that a fair assessment?
I guess, yeah. I don't know all the details. What I'm able to gather just from, you know, these departures, two today and three and all, from May's cabinet, is that they make a policy statement when they go in. They're going to support this, 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 and this. And if the deal that they end up with doesn't comply with what they've stated when they're sworn in, they literally resign. They haven't caught on to, you know, U.S. politics, where you say something when you're inaugurated and then come aboard and say, oh, I meant something else.
Right. I mean,
they haven't caught on to that.
No, they actually, if But they had a British dude on CNBC yesterday, and they have the guy from Britain who's the afternoon host, and he's kind of a let's get this behind us kind of thing, the host guy, because evidently CNBC is pro let's get it over with, and this guy was just railing on this thing, and like this thing is totally unacceptable to anybody voted to get out of there. We're still under the same idiots, and now we can't even get out of it this time because there's no recourse. Because this is nuts. They essentially put us right back in. What part of exit don't you get? I mean, and so it's going to take a while. I mean, I don't think it could.
I mean, if there's no confidence vote or something where, you know, they need the Labor Party to join the Conservatives or this or that or the other, there could be a second referendum.
I guess.
I mean, it was no, but now with this stuff, it could.
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, it's a way to get another one out there like that. But it's not we were just talking with Fari, David, about, you know, stuff like long-term capital and things that cause these, like, single huge issue things that cause the market to go way down. All of a sudden, this issue somehow gets resolved. The Fed declares victory. Something happens. They bail the place out or some crap, and all of a sudden we have this massive V-shaped bottom, and we go off to the races on top of it. And I was just speculating, of course, I don't know, that the Brexit here is just one of so many items. I don't think the Brexit is something I would trade U.S. stock markets on at all. Yet,
no, other than instability.
Right.
I mean, the surprising thing to me is with all this turmoil and Italy and, you know, our own politics and trade and whatever, I would have thought. And I've never, you know, until the last several months, I've not ever really been bullish gold. And I know with the dollar so high, you're not going to be, you know, jacking up gold. But I would think the tendency or desire for hard assets amidst all this political turmoil everywhere, if nothing else, would get gold to 1250, 1275. And it rallies 20 bucks and then gives up the entire rally.
Yeah, I know. I know that. Better than most, because I got a bunch of it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, a 5%, 6%. You know, really, just on, you know, geez, I want to put my hands on something. You know, hard metal. At least that's been the thing. And I mean, even Bitcoin, you know, crashed through the lows, 1 year lows. I mean, you'd think they'd. I mean, other than King Dollar, they don't want anything.
Well, your buddy Ray Dalio, billionaire investor, comes on this morning. He claims that the Fed has raised rates to the point where they're hurting asset prices. Well, God, David, why does everybody always give one side of the story? When you went to zero interest rates, you pumped up asset prices. And now that you're going back to somewhat near normal, whatever normal is, you're going to come back the other way a little bit. I've always been of the, you know, the things have a value, and the value becomes from the earnings, becomes from innovation, becomes from all those kinds of things. We all know what, quote, should move the market. And if you have an interest rate that's always 3.25%, 2.75%, somewhere in there, a risk-free rate, everything gets valued in such a way where the rate determining step, I'll use a chemical thing, is in the innovation, is in the profits, it is in the other stuff. When you got a Fed that goes from 8% to zero to back to 7% or wherever the hell they're going to go this time, all that valuation in asset prices has to do with your central bank. It literally, instead of being 90% earnings and innovation, it's down to what, 30%, and I don't like to see that over a generational pattern, and it seems like that's all we see now. Everybody's bitching, they're going the other way, and the prices are coming down. Well, they probably should never have been there in the first place. You know, I mean, the S&P should be at 2,000. It never should have gone to 2,400 and down. That last 400 points was all Fed, and now to come down prices all Fed. I don't think they should be in that business, David. And I mean, yet they have been for how many years now? 25, 30? We'll go back to the early 80s. Volcker didn't have to do that. You know, 16%. Look what he did to asset prices, for God's sake. I mean, I don't know if that's their job, man. If they did their job right, that wouldn't happen.
I agree. And I mean, to me, I've always thought that Greenspan was amongst the worst Fed.
Oh, me too.
Ever.
Yep.
And I mean, you know, he raised, and lower, and right before the Great Recession, you know, oh, asset price, oh, you know, building, you know, oh, it's these derivatives, and What did he do about it? Nothing. I mean, that's under the Federal Reserve.
They
did nothing.
They should have known the incredible amount of currency transfers come because. Let me help you with this.
The leverage.
Yeah, but let me help you.
The leverage on the Goldman Sachs, Deutsche Bank, you know, derivatives. I mean, come on. They knew.
We have had, I won't say adult beverages. We were in the library, Maddie, the George Washington Library. And I got a great conference room.
Sure.
On the fifth floor where you can have coffee in there. So I was in the library with some of the Fed people. And one of the, happens to be female, she is in charge. I mean, the Chicago Fed does an awful lot of stuff. And I'm not talking about policy. We never talk policy. And by the way, these guys can't influence policy. They're the worker bees that do the real stuff. They're the guys that make sure that if an exchange in Zimbabwe goes under, it doesn't impact the Zimbabwe second, you know, central bank or the European system or ours. They do all, these guys are drop dead brilliant. Even though I argue with them constantly. One of the ladies, I don't think, David, that you can, I don't think, you know, in terms of money or whatever, you can't cash a check for $50. And I'm telling you that she doesn't know about it. I mean, every check, every dime that comes in and out of the Chicago Fed, I mean, she gets the run and lets you know where's it going. So try and tell me that she didn't, I know she knew, I didn't ask her, when all that money was coming in for Japan to buy in these mortgage-backed securities at 6.5%, you and I would never have dreamt that. Why the hell would anybody go out on a limb to buy, to put money into something returning 6%? It was 12 or 15 or 20, maybe. Clearly, in the early 80s, you'd clean out your piggy bank of the $30 and bring it down to the bank if you're getting 15% on it. We all know that. You wouldn't for 6. You'd leave it in the piggy. What's the 6 is okay. It's not, you know, it's a nice night out. It's not an evening with Christy Brinkley. What can I say? You know, I mean, it's okay. So if anybody knew or any should have known,
I got that analogy, yeah, but whatever.
Well, I'm saying it's okay. 6% is a nice return, but it's not enough that you should be having to manufacture mortgages to put them in the portfolio.
Right. No, I mean, that I agree with.
They should have understood that all his money was coming from Japan and these other places where interest rates were 1%. Should have said, whoa, this is not sustainable. This is nuts. But they didn't. They were as surprised as we were. But I think, I'll tell you what, there's people.
And yet they commented about it. I'm afraid that they did know about it and just were afraid to pull the plug because they knew that, you know, they'd have some, you know, Solomon Brothers or, you know, Bear Stearns or, you know, Merrill Lynch's on their hands, you know, which they ended up having anyways.
Well, I think at some point when you talk about the regulation, and you know, and you're connected with PTI and you know that I'm going to say that we are incredibly overregulated. All right. I mean, when we have an audit, and it's fine. We welcome everybody, and we've always passed them all swimmingly. But 5-6 people show up. How the hell?
And camp down for a week.
Camp down for a week. But how the hell does Bear Stearns get away with 10 or 15 or 20 off balance sheet companies? How the hell could we ever pull that off with five guys going through every file in the place? I mean, how do you spend all your time worrying about firms like PTI? We don't have any capability. I wish we did.
I'm telling you, I actually had some insight because I used to give research to a group there. And Chicago office, not New York, although I did one research paper on oil for the New York office. But they invited me in. Oh, you know, you do all this stuff a la carte. Why don't you just come join us? And at the time, they had these oil warrants. I may have mentioned this before, and I did a study on what the pricing of these oil warrants were. And, I mean, they belonged at about $1.52, and they were pricing them at, you know, 4.25 and sold millions of them and whatever. And there were, you know, customer complaints and class action lawsuits like, you know, 2 weeks after that. They looked at my stuff and threw it in the garbage, and that was it. And, I mean, you could, you know, my son has no background in finance could have told you that they were mispriced. Meanwhile, 2 weeks later, when all these lawsuits are being filed, I'm over there for an interview, and the guy takes me into the company lounge and says, you know, we'll meet here. And then he gets a intercom call, and they say, well, we have to go into the walk-in closet because the examiners are here.
Oh, God.
We have to have the interview in the closet. And to God, true story.
Well, the whole purpose of the regulation that I see, that's why I was on the way in this morning, actually I was waiting for Manny this morning, I was like, if only I could, and this is not a shot at women, it's not, certainly not a shot at African-American people, if only I could interview Maxine Waters for a half hour. And I'll bet she turns out to be a lot brighter than somehow she depicts herself. But
she didn't have any puts when she made that announcement on bank regulation.
Oh God,
did she?
No! Which is worse, not having them, or at least knowing you should have some, or actually having them.
All I can say is, for years I argued with you about conspiracy theory, and now I are one.
Yes, you are one. But I would say, when somebody says regulation, what is that word? What does that word even mean? There needs to be more regulation. There's no definition. How do you have more regulation? It's like saying you should be more dead. You know, I mean,
how about more honest?
Or more honest? Yeah. I mean, yeah. How do you get more honest? You either are or you aren't. Does it mean instead of 40 people sitting there at Citigroup every day in New York, you now have 45 with nothing to do, or do you
instead of having 78 pages of regulations, you have 120?
Yeah, I mean, and for what? Or do you anticipate what the next problem is, and have people smart enough to head that one off at the pass?
Well, how about, you know, and that what that point you just made? How about these stress tests?
Oh, what a waste of paper.
I mean, well, and 13 passed, and one's conditional, and two didn't, and oh, you know, in an absolute terrible situation, you know, like 2008, 2009, here's what the capital requirements are going to be based on that. I mean, have we not come a little bit up from there?
David,
I mean a little bit.
David, the definition.
And Europe adapted the same stress test?
But I don't know, if you... I'll keep this under 30 seconds. The purpose of a central bank in a banking system is to deal as a bank of last resort on something that literally could not have been foreseen. Literally. Not because you weren't looking or because you were playing too much golf. I mean, literally could not have been foreseen. So you want your banks, they take people's money in and they give loans, which means they take risks. And if they have some capital, the risk is on them, okay? And what you do is you regulate to a point where you say, okay, if David and Maddie's community bank has a few loans in there I don't like so much, it's okay, because if they go under, it's going to cost them $50 million, and by the way, they've got 75, it's on them, okay? But you should never have your system so tight in the drawers, essentially, where they're afraid to make a loan because then you don't have any growth. And you should never really be in a situation where the David and Maddie Community Bank, if an asteroid hits on your neighborhood, and guess what? You do go broke. The whole idea is there's now 20,000 other banks, and if the Fed has to bail you out, they bail you out. That's what they're for, right?
Right.
And there needs to be if you have a banking system where everybody goes broke, it's not a good one. If you have a banking system where nobody goes broke, it's not a good one either.
Right.
But I don't think, I don't honestly believe that the Maxine Waters of the world understand that. Now, this thing in Northern California, if those banks don't have a problem there, I'd be stunned. I mean, look how many mortgages aren't going to get paid. Look how many people. I don't know. The insurance might cover everything. It might not cover everything. I don't know. But guess what, David? That's why you have a central bank, is to deal with something nobody could possibly have foreseen. Right?
Yeah, and you have to have some, and I'm not for no regulation, I agree, middle of the road is the best. But, you know, if you clamp down on them so much and then there's, you know, three wildfires and they can't loan to try and, you know, help out, you got real problems.
Well, but little stuff like when Audrey does a closing now, okay? If somebody screws up on the closing paper and somebody adds it up wrong, you know, our buddy Thomas is the lawyer, and he adds a thing up wrong, and Matty owes $200 at his closing. Matty, you can't pull $200 out of your pocket, and Jill can't write a check, or somebody can't write a check for $200. Oh no, you can't do that. You got to wire it in. Why? Well, that check's no good. We can't take a check. We can't take cash. What manner of moron instituted that in this country that you can't take cash $200 at a closing? Why? It's legal tender, for God's sake. Your check. Does anybody think Maddie's going to buy a house and bounce a check for $200? I mean, does anybody think? And if he does, you come and get it next
week. Putting $40,000 down or $20,000 down, but $200.
Yeah, he's going to bounce a check for. I mean, what manner of moron figures this stuff up, Maddie? I mean, this is the kind of regulation we don't need. I don't think. SP Futures up a buck. Dow Futures up 18. NASDAQ Futures up 20. David, thank you very much.
All right.
Hope we keep getting this oil and gold from your lips to God's ear. Be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.